Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Damage Report. Still under lockdown, maybe broadcasting. I don't know. I'm looking at the preview and I don't see it yet. So maybe we have a show, maybe we don't. Maybe you can hear me, maybe you can't. It is a brave new digital world that we're living in. And we've got a lot to talk about, including night two of the RNC, a convention so insane. I totally understand if you checked out. I get it. But we're going to talk a little bit about what came out of it. And when I say we, I mean me, but also JR Jackson, who joins us once again. How's it going, JR?
Hey, what's going on? I did notice that you didn't mention a big news day, mostly because during convention week, it's kind of the convention. And that's kind of it. But there's other stuff that's going on. It's just, you know, we can't overpromote something that doesn't really happen.
I mean, look, there is some really big tragic news today that we're going to be transitioning to very shortly. I don't know if that's the sort that usually we brand Wednesdays with. And we've got some other news too. We're going to be taking a sort of zoomed out look at the two conventions so far and try to get an idea of how the American public is absorbing them. We're going to do a little bit of that. And we're going to touch base with that whole, you know, that plan to just pretend that the pandemic's gone and send all the kids back to school. We're going to see how that's going. You can probably guess. And we've also got some other protests. So some footage going around from Columbia Heights yesterday. I think it might have been, you might have played it on the Young Turks yesterday, but we got to mention this thing because some of these protests have gotten out of control in a particular way that I think can be checked. Anyway, if you're already in the audience, as a bunch of you are, thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it. Please hit the like button, share the stream, assuming you can see the stream, and we can talk a lot, we can chat along. I'll be reading your YouTube chats, your super chats, your tweets and your Twitches as well. And with that, JR, you ready to start this thing?
I think so.
Man, it's not particularly new or particularly rare, but like how many times do you just not want to do the news sometimes because it's just so okay, let's do it. I mean, this is our job. I guess we got to do it.
It's usually after a late night of the convention that you feel like not doing the news.
Exactly. Oh god, some of these stories.
We want to warn you that the following content contains sensitive material that some may find disturbing and or distressing, including videos and images depicting physical violence and police brutality. Viewer discretion is advised.
Yesterday in Kenosha, at the protests that have been going on following the shooting of Jacob Blake, multiple protesters were shot and killed. We have some idea of who it might have been, but it hasn't been confirmed yet. We're going to show you some of the footage and understand there's a lot of videos going around. It's difficult to know exactly when certain things happened, what is being missed, what context isn't being included. So please understand all of that. And also understand that in these videos we're going to show you, there are shots being fired, there are people being to you so that you can understand a little bit more about what happened, but it is what it is. So understand that this is violence. This is people being killed. So here is the first video. As far as I can tell, this seems to be the video that shows what happened before the video that's really being spread that we're going to show you has been going around. Here is an individual admitting on tape that he just killed someone. Okay, so the person that you saw run by in green, I don't know if maybe it was cut off in that video, but he says into a radio or a cell phone or something, I just killed someone. He is believed to be the individual who shot and killed multiple people yesterday. So we're gonna go to the second video in just a second. Again, warning, this actually has shots in the video. So I believe, and I could be wrong, understand that the video you just saw happened, that person runs away and people understandably tried to apprehend the person who had just murdered someone, and it leads into this video.
Yeah.
JR?
Okay. So, this is the part that everyone's talking about, him walking down the street. First off, first thing is shooting multiple people that are chasing him. And then continuing, shots fired, then walking down the street at what looks like military vehicles, masses, police vehicles, down the street, and he's has absolutely zero fear of cops apprehending him, shooting him, killing him with this big long gun wrapped around his chest. And he was described as walking with his hands up, which was done in intervals, you know, hands up, back down, adjusting rifle, hands up, back down. So all those things could be seen as aggressive behavior. You keep touching your gun, that can kill us, but there's a trust factor there. Never once did it cross his mind that he could be spooking off the cops. They could think he's the aggressor. None of that ever crossed his mind because he's right. They'll never think that he's the aggressor. They'll never think that this gun is a dangerous weapon around his shoulder. They'll never think that. And they proved it right there. So that's just one small part of it. But we'll get to more of the reactions to it. But that's the first thing that I think stands out for anyone that can watch this is there's a presumption of innocence and just letting him go that gets assumed, and it pans out every time. But someone without any instance of a gun, someone with a cell phone in their hand, all those things get mistaken for guns all the time. And people get shot and killed immediately over stuff like that. Someone could be breaking up a fight. And then after they walk away from cops around the distance of a car, not half a city block, around the distance of a car, gets shot in the back. Because of why? Because of what weapon that was being waved at officers? None of that happens. But it's just these are the right people that we can kill, because we show up to a chaotic scene, and if we see someone with a gun, it must be the guy with the gun that's causing the chaos, right? 2 + 2 = 4. No, only if there's a certain guy without a gun that we believe causes chaos, it seems, that we can shoot that guy.
Yeah, you made a lot of great points. I mean, one, he wasn't worried at all. No, because, and look, again, there's a lot of context around this. Some of it has been confirmed, some hasn't. There's militia members in the area seemingly working with the police. There's a ton of videos going around of the cops like buddy-buddy with them. They're giving them drinks of water and stuff like that. The militia members are saying they're working with the cops. We don't know for sure if the individual who we believe is the shooter from that video, it's going around. I'm not gonna say the person's name because that has been, people have gotten that wrong in the past. It seems pretty clear who this individual is. And we don't know for sure if he was one of the militia members, but to jump ahead, on Tuesday, a group calling itself the Kenosha Guard asked members and followers on Facebook to come downtown and be prepared to defend the city. One post read, "Any patriots willing to take up arms and defend out city tonight from the evil thugs? None doubt they are currently planning on the next part of the city to burn tonight." So I don't know if the individual with the AR-15, who's seemingly a 17-year-old, went there as a result of that post, but he definitely went there for that reason. Whether he knew about that post or that militia or not, he went there to have a gun and defend the city. And what do you know? He started shooting people. And after he shot the first person and apparently already killed someone, he thought he had killed someone, when they try to apprehend him, he doesn't want to get caught, of course, so he starts murdering other people. And there, it's not speculation. It's not a hypothetical as to whether right wingers are gonna say he was right to shoot those people who tried to apprehend him. It's already all over the place. Matt Walsh and other right wingers are already saying they deserve to be shot because they attacked that guy with the gun. Okay, so what was it, Ahmaud Arbery? They thought it was totally right for those guys to jump in their car with guns and track down someone that they think trespassed on property? So who do you get to apprehend and who do you not get to apprehend? If it's someone who you just saw murder another individual, if you try to stop him and you get shot, it's on you, according to these right wingers. But if it's a black individual that might have trespassed on property, you get to go with guns and you get to shoot him in the street if you want to. You're totally justified. And again, as with everything in this, it is entirely dependent on the race of each of the individuals involved in it.
Yeah, these guys are extensions of the law. As long as they say that they are, as long as the law enforcement accepts them, the right kinds of people to be extensions of the law running down the street. But if you brought up Ahmaud Arbery, but you know, if he happened to have a gun on him, which he wouldn't because he was out for a run, Mm-hmm. But if he happened to have a gun on him and he responded and killed both of those guys, all three of them that were hunting him down over nothing, guess what they would have said about him? Mm. It's a confirmation of his law breaking previous to that, the fact that he had a gun and the fact that he shot people who were trying to stop him. But in this case, have those same people said that there's a confirmation of his murderous tendencies because he showed up with a gun, shot at more people? So in my mind, that's a confirmation that he is looking to kill people. Or he's so afraid for what he did already the first time, or being held for his actions being actually carried out and held against him. He's so afraid of consequences that he shot more people. That sounds like a criminal to me. To avoid any kind of apprehension, so you shoot more people. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, there's only about a million angles I want to talk about, points I want to make. I'm not going to be able to, because at some point I'm just going to have to tap out. Because
you know why? Can I tell you one more thing? So the governor, Tony Evers of Wisconsin, is that where we are? Yeah. So he was tweeting about it, and there was a point he tried to make to try and go down the middle of it. He says, we cannot allow the cycle of systemic racism and injustice to continue. Oh, good point, Tony. Second sentence of this tweet. We also cannot continue to down this path of damage and destruction. Okay, yeah. Tony, I hear you. Yeah. You don't want to down the path of damage and destruction of destroying our communities. Next tweet that's part of this thread. We are assessing the damage to state property and will be increasing the presence of the Wisconsin National Guard to ensure individuals can exercise their rights safely, protect state buildings and critical infrastructure, and support first responders and firefighters. So that second tweet, he went through ways that we can protect the city, which was the second part of his first tweet. We can't go down this path of damage and destruction. Where's the plan that's going to back up the first sentence of your first tweet? We cannot allow the cycle of systemic racism and injustice to continue. That's the thing that sparks every one of these protests and then subsequent fights and subsequent shootings. That first sentence you just say. The second sentence you back up with actions and reasons and a plan to actually carry that out. Where's your plan to carry out that first sentence about stopping the cycle of systemic racism and injustice? Yeah. There's nothing ever there for that. It's just saying, we have to stop it. How are you going to stop it, Tony? Oh, but you have a plan to stop protesters from going in the streets, and then some of them do cause damage to buildings and infrastructure and cars and homes and all that stuff. Yeah, those things happen. You have a plan to stop that. You got the Wisconsin National Guard coming in to stop that. Where's the Wisconsin National Guard coming in to stop the police from murdering people every week on camera in this country? Where's the plan, Tony? That's what we get, and Tony's a Democrat. This is what we get. We get Democrats that say, we gotta do something about this problem in our country. And they don't do anything about the problem in our country. Then afterwards they said, we have to stop people from destroying our infrastructure. They have a plan for that though. Where's the plan for the first part? The first part continues to happen. It keeps happening and it keeps happening and it keeps happening. The second part, we just blame on the protesters for responding to what keeps happening and keeps happening and keeps happening. We're tired of it. And now the guns are being openly shot in the middle of the street between two sides of a protest. Guess who else is going to come out now with guns, prepared to shoot back?
Yep.
It's the race war that these white supremacists have been begging for 100 years.
And we've been saying from the beginning that they're infiltrating to cause violence, to start a race war. Not all of them, some of them just want to kill people, but some want it to develop in this big thing. How many months have we been saying that? If you've been watching the show, how many months have we been saying that? And they're continuing to do it. Like almost uniformly, the violence is coming from the right, including violence against cops. I've tried occasionally to convince the cops, hey, maybe don't protect the people that routinely ambush and murder you, but I guess I can't get through to them. They prefer the people who kill them to the peaceful protesters. They honestly do. And so Evers, are you gonna stop the cops from coordinating with these militias? Are you gonna do that? I don't think so. Seems like you're cool with them.
Not at all.
And by the way, so I sort of just assumed, you know how stupid and naive I am? I just assumed some of the fundamental facts of this story I didn't need to go over because everyone would know, but I forgot. Oh no, wait, this isn't really a story. It's getting a little bit of coverage that a guy who's been identified as potentially a militia member went to these protests to murder people and has gotten away with it. Because Rachado in the chat says, was the shooter ever arrested? No.
Of course not.
No. No, you saw him walk up and give the weird hand signal. You couldn't really see it in the video we showed, but there's another angle that he does a weird hand signal to the cops for some reason. Maybe it's nothing, I don't know. He walks past and the cops are like, hey, Dude with the rifle that just ran away from the shooting. Is someone shot over there?
What's going on over there?
We'll see you. And they drove away. So the cops are looking for the person. They just let him go. Guy running away from the shooting with a rifle. They just let him go. Now, it seems like he's inevitably going to be caught because people believe they have a really good idea of who this individual is. But we don't know for sure. We don't know for sure that he'll get caught, or that if he does get caught, he'll be charged, or that he'll ever do a day in jail, despite the fact that he clearly went there to murder people. And I know maybe there's some people in the chat that love guns or whatever. Let me ask you a simple question that I always have to ask after these situations. If he had done everything else that he did, this individual, if he'd gone to those protests but hadn't had a gun, would anyone be dead today? Would he be dead? Would the people he shot be dead? Would they instead have killed each other with their bare hands? No, you don't think that. He'd be fine and he wouldn't have murdered anyone. The element that caused the destruction was his choice to have a gun, his ability to have a weapon of war on the streets of Kenosha. He brought a gun and so people are dead. He brought a gun so that people would be dead. Those are the two facts that we need to bash into people's heads. We need to get them to understand this because they refuse to acknowledge those two simple facts. You carry a gun hoping to use it, hoping to kill someone. And when you carry a gun, what do you know? The odds that people that someone dies goes up dramatically. And we've seen that once again.
So, I mean, if we're gonna follow the rules of this militia group that apparently has some kind of ties with the police force here, all Black Lives Matter protests or any kind of protest, doesn't matter. If you're against police brutality and protests, just post on Facebook that you're going to show up there with a group of people with guns. And that's going to clear you of anything you want to do, right? Because that's what they're trying to insinuate here. They said, okay, so this militia group told us on Facebook that they're going to show up with guns, so they're prepared to see us with guns, right? Oh, so should the other group show up with long guns strapped around their shoulders and tell the cops, hey, we're just going to show up with guns, you guys. We're just here to protest. And you think the cops are going to go, good job, fellas, continue on. No, they're going to see that as a threat. They're going to call it an aggression, and protesters taking to the streets, armed protesters taking to the streets to destroy our infrastructure and kill our cops. That's what it's going to be called. Not this. This is in coordination with the cops, so therefore it's okay.
Someone in the chat said that they've caught the individual. I haven't yet found that. They have to. Whether, you know, he ever gets any time in jail, that's a totally different story. But they have to. By the way, I just saw a tweet from Donald Trump 1 minute ago. We will not stand for looting, arson, violence, and lawlessness on American streets. My team just got off the phone with Governor Evers, who agreed to accept federal assistance. Portland should do the same. Today, I will be sending federal law enforcement and the National Guard to Kenosha to restore law and order. Nothing about the murders. Nothing about the fact that it seemingly was a militia member or someone supportive of their goals who went there to murder people and murdered people, and at least that night got away with it. He was able to use murder to cover up his murder and get away. They didn't say anything about that. And can I just point out one other thing, you know, while we're talking about Trump and about the Republican Party? You remember how angry we were about two of the speakers at the RNC two nights ago, the McCloskeys? Yep. What are the McCloskeys famous for? For wielding an AR-15 in defense of property. That is not a defense of property because their property was never actually threatened. They pointed the gun at peaceful protesters who were marching nearby and got very close to killing someone. And that was enough that they're now celebrities on the right. So now this individual, what did he take it half a step farther? He brought his gun to defend property. Seemingly, if it is the individual we think it is, he crossed state lines to defend his property. So that makes sense. And he actually killed people. And why wouldn't he do that? He's being told by Fox News every day that these are murderous thugs that are gonna burn down your buildings, that are gonna come for your family, and they're gonna kill you. So you have to stand up for yourself. And if you stand up for yourself, like the McCloskeys, we're gonna give you accolades and screen time, and you're gonna be held up as a hero. So this individual is right to think that he's a hero for the right. And you think they're gonna actually denounce him? You think that Fox is gonna take stock of their rhetoric as a result of this? We've been predicting this for literally months. None of the previous murders have gotten through to them. Why would this? This guy did what their audience wishes they could do themselves.
Yes. Yeah, no, Fox News may take stock of what they're saying and their rhetoric and how it's panned out and be like, congratulations, that was mission accomplished. Demonize a certain group, praise the others, and then when things go down, we continue to demonize that first group because mission accomplished. We're looking to demonize them and keep them from trying to get the attention of enough people to change the way we do things in this country. That's the bottom line. We can't have anything change here. And these agents of change, we have to make sure that they're seen as the bad guys. It's all their, that's their job.
Two people are dead. I should say two more people have been killed by this out of control white supremacist cult of personality that we're currently facing. They were defending him instantly, defending him instantly. Why the hell was he there? Why was he there? Why was he there with a gun? No, you get to be. You get to be because again, as we've said many times, the gun is both the way that you kill people and it's the pretext to kill people. Because you get to be scared for your life if somebody comes near your gun and you get to say that you're afraid they're gonna take it. So you bring the thing that lets you say how scared you are and how you have to use it. That is always what they do. That's always what they do. They're doing it again right here. Are you sure that Tucker Carlson's not gonna like defend him tonight?
Yes, he will.
Jesus. As our audience was telling us in real time, I have now found actual reports that 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse of Antioch, Illinois has been arrested and charged in the murder of multiple individuals in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He was labeled as a fugitive of justice because he fled back across state lines to evade prosecution for that. So again, a reminder, this individual wanted to defend his property. So he got a gun, he went to a different state, murdered people and then ran back home. So that individual.
Continue. I'm curious what state he's from that he went back to.
So apparently Illinois, Antioch, Illinois.
It's Antioch. Oh, it's not Chicago, you mean? Oh, I thought Chicago was the epicenter of violence and people that hold, that shoot at people and run around and break the law every day. I mean, I keep hearing that from conservative circles how Chicago is the epicenter of disaster. Maybe because there's a racial makeup that they believe in their mind only presides in Chicago, that they can now blame all violence on. If this guy's from Antioch, is it the entire state of Illinois? I don't know. Or is it just pick and choose who you decide to hate long guns that walk by the cops after murdering people?
Exactly. And so look, that was the individual that we believed was the murderer. I didn't say it during the first part because we don't want to accidentally potentially out someone who it turns out it wasn't them. I don't think we've ever done that in this show, but it has happened before. But no, it was exactly that individual. It was this 17-year-old who has an AR-15 because much of American culture, at least white culture, thinks that that's totally normal and acceptable. And he would just drive around state lines and he'd go to protests and he murdered some people. And then after he'd murdered one person and people tried to apprehend the murderer, he started shooting other people. Because again, personal responsibility, that's the culture that's being taught. Anyway, we'll see what ends up happening and we'll see what defense is offered up of him. If you think, again, I'll say the same thing. If you think that Fox News isn't gonna defend this guy later today, man, welcome back to reality. I guess you've been sleeping for a while.
They've been setting it up. If you've already conditioned the American people enough to believe that any kind of competition that happens with protesters versus these militia folks or anyone else, that the bad guys are the protesters, it doesn't matter what the reality is. You'll go back and say, remember what we told you? Tap back into that. Absolve yourself from reality, tap back into what we taught you. The other guys are the bad guys.
And by the way, again, I don't want to go super in depth into all the research that's come about this individual because again, there's the possibility that some things might not be confirmed. But what I saw as of last night was this individual, part of the thing that helped him to be tracked down was he did a stream. I don't know if it was Snapchat or TikTok or whatever from a Trump rally and identified himself. So weird and random and totally unrelated that he loves Donald Trump. And all of their narratives about the mobs and how they're coming for you and you gotta defend yourself. And it looks like he killed a few people. Weird and totally unrelated. I don't even know why I brought it up. I'm wasting our time.
Too much speculation. What's wrong with you?
It is speculation. I mean, it is speculation.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR,
The host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Last night was night two of the RNC. We want to give just a little bit of the reaction. We're going to give some of ours, but also how are other people responding to this? Well, here is one take from David Axelrod that I thought was a little bit interesting immediately following the night.
As a production, you know, I think they're doing pretty well, to be honest with you. President Trump is a television man. This is a reality show. He's used all the techniques of reality shows. There was a hunks of high cholesterol red meat stuffed within kind of image softening buns. There'll be plenty for fact checkers to be working on for days to come based on both what they said about Trump's record and Biden's.
You know what? By the way, you can praise or congratulate or point out the production values because they have a background and people walk out and speak and it's as close to a convention look as possible remotely. That's fine. I don't care if you praise that. It's okay. It doesn't change anything about their policies, their agenda, their hatred. It looks good. Okay, if you believe that. I haven't really looked at it close enough to see if it looks good or bad. I don't care. So if it's the point of their production values are nice, fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, I'm sure they got into the content of what was being spewed with these nice production values. So, Axelrod has his issues. I think he's okay there.
Yeah. Okay. So look, it's not that I totally hate it or anything. And by the way, it's not that he's wrong in some sense. It was perfectly high production value. I mean, you know, like a part of producing an event like this would be to like have one of these taped speeches because so many of them were taped despite all the stuff that they said about Joe Biden. Basically all the Trump family speeches are taped. And then maybe say, hey, so that was a good take. Let's do it again, but like don't scream through the entire thing or like could you dust off your crazy, sweaty, coked up brow? That's a part of production. Like yes. If I was to just start screaming for 45 minutes, I got a producer and a director on the line. They'd probably be like, hey, so like maybe don't do that next time. That's a part of production. But the part that bothered me. Oh, sorry, continue.
No, go. No, I was just saying because Don Jr. said the reason his eyes were watering is because the lights were so bright. That is a bad production.
Yeah, that's true. He might be right because there was like the weird line of light across his eyes. And I can sympathize because I spent 5 months looking into a ring light and it would just burn my eyes by the end of a show. But anyway, it was the thing about like the, you know, the Trump's a reality show president. So, okay, it's not that he's not the reality show president, but do you think Trump was involved in this? Like, Trump doesn't work, man. Yes, they gave Trump what he would want. They chose, you know, random Fox News guests to come on. I get that. But it's not like Trump was checking the video quality and adjusting the lighting. Like, let's just pump the brakes on the reality show thing. Yes, our country is a parody. I get it. Not everything is directly related to that, though. But anyway,
I missed that part. You're right. Yeah, the Trump is a TV guy part because he's a TV guy because he's the guy in front of the camera who does the acting. That's the TV guy part he is. Mm-hmm. Now, I know in Hollywood, plenty of actors have crossed over and become directors and writers and producers and all that stuff. And that's wonderful because they want more of a hand in the creative side. They're creative people. I don't know how much Donald Trump, like, he contributes to the creative and visuals of what he's got. He may just say, make me look good. No, I don't like that someone else who's on the screen with me. I need just my face. Like, maybe things like that is the best.
Exactly. You know what? You know what? You just teed me up for the next section, because the make me look good, there was a good bit of attempts at that last night. So let's transition to this. Last night saw Melania Trump's speech, and she did basically what, you know, the wife of a president does in these sorts of speeches. Try to humanize them, make them look a little bit better, make them feel a little bit better. And Trump was in the audience, so they were within 100 feet of each other, which is a rare occurrence. But Trump seemed to enjoy it. But you know what he's gonna like even better than Melania's speech? It is the morning after with Fox and Friends, like doing a show technically, like there's cameras and other people can watch it, but it was clearly going to one person. So take a look at some of their coverage of Melania's speech.
I think that one of the most famous walks ever in convention history was Bill Clinton when he walked through all those tunnels and all those hallways. I think the most famous walk now is Melania Trump's walk down the colonnade in order to give the speech from the White House. And she nailed it. She knocked it out of the park. And unlike Major League Baseball players, she did it in front of a live audience.
And well, there she is right there.
What a story.
Great. And the cover of the New York Post this morning, it says simply, give them Mel, as in Melania. First lady makes impassioned pitch for 4 more years. Of course, the Democrats are steamed that she, you know, they're doing things at the White House, and that Mike Pompeo, who is the sitting Secretary of State, right, is making political statements while he's out working. And there will be an investigation, the Democrats
good
say. So anyway.
Okay, so we're gonna turn to the Hatch Act violations and stuff in just a moment, but like, come on, they're holding up, hey Trump, they like her, they like your wife, she did a good job, buddy, what do you feel better this morning? Like, it was so clearly focused just to him. You'd never have in a movie about a ridiculous propaganda network, they would not have gone that far in a satire. And there they were clearly, she was great, she was best, it was historic. Oh God, Trump, your wife, she did good for you.
I understand that that maybe we didn't see them continue on with their conversation, if they ever got to any of the content that she spoke of during her speech there on Fox and Friends, or if they just ended it with, she made an epic walk down a hallway and she nailed it. You mean she didn't fall over herself? She didn't trip over her heels. She didn't break her ankle. We didn't see a fail video that's going to pop up on the internet one day of her falling from walking down a hallway to get
she walked.
That's what she nailed it out of the park in doing is walking. What's the baseball reference? I really was just trying to make sense of it.
There's a joke.
But I don't get what baseball players walk down a hallway. I'm just
no, is that that she hit out of the park, but there was an audience.
Okay. Oh my God.
Dun dun. Yeah, she walked. That's true. She physically moved from one place to the other. I don't know. Maybe I have. I apologize if I have. But I've covered a lot of Bernie speeches. I don't think I ever focused on his walk. I don't think with AOC I've ever been like, you know what? Screw what she said. The walk to the podium was historic. I don't think I've ever done that. Look, but he did mention that she did it in front of a crowd, and that's where I'd like to turn now, because she did. Let's take a look at a shot of the crowd. Now, that crowd proves a few things. One is, man, they are moving on from this pandemic thing. They don't care at all about that. Now, what's interesting about that crowd, you can leave it up for a second, is they had said in advance it was gonna be 70 people. You can do a rough count for yourself. That ain't no 70 people. That's at least 100 people, if not more, which is interesting because gatherings of more than 50 are actually prohibited in Washington, D.C., but I guess they can just do whatever they want. Asher, our producer, counted 2 masks in the footage that we saw yesterday. They're not 6 feet apart. And what's really funny about this is we found out sort of in real time, according to Caitlin Collins, coronavirus tests were not required for Rose Garden attendees tonight. So basically no masks, they packed them in there. They had more than they were supposed to. They had more than they said they were going to. They didn't require coronavirus tests because again, the pandemic's gone. They all referred to it in the past tense. They're fine, they're not scared, they're not worried, except are they? Because what we just showed you about coronavirus tests not being required is only partly true. We later found out Melania's chief of staff said that guests seated in the rows near Trump and Pence were tested, but the rest weren't. Ooh. How transparent, they don't care about your lives. They only care about themselves.
I wonder who, like, I was trying to see who, there's some source that talks about who was the makeup of the audience. that was allowed to come in, you know, not tested. Because that was the first thing I thought, even before we got to the point that if you sat near the important people, that you had to be tested. But if you're sitting amongst, you know, the the commoners, or if they're even commoners, again, I don't know what the audience's makeup was. But if you're amongst the people that aren't as important as the president, the vice president, and the first lady, hey, have at it, bro. And by the way, I wasn't there. If you want to show up to your event and you know, flout all the rules and any kind of precautions, that's up to you. I honestly, I'm going to let people go at this point. You know, I mean, we all know the details and the facts that are out there. They know it too. So if you don't want to follow it, that's up to you. But I get how it can also spread to other folks. So I get the reason why we're concerned about it. But these folks don't surround themselves with anyone else. That's not them anyway. So when it comes to these events, it's them.
And it's maybe. Them. But I mean, the thing is, like, you know, there was another senator who just got diagnosed with coronavirus recently, and someone in the chat mentioned they're going to get Ben Carson. Like, they just saw one of the people in Trump's circle. You know, a loyal follower follows him around the country, goes to his events. He died as a result of it. And other people are like, no, that's just even more reason I got to prove my loyalty by going to this thing.
Or
and
just to flat out ignore it that he died. Sorry.
Yeah, flat out ignore it. Pretend that we're past it, just like they did in their speeches. Like I tweeted last night, if you woke up from like a 6-month coma, you'd watch all of these speeches. You'd have no idea that 1,100 plus people died in the last daily reporting. You'd never know it. And that was 100, 120 people, give or take, for Melania's speech. How many people do you think are going to be at Trump's speech? You think he's going to allow a small crowd? He is going to be desperate for as big a crowd as possible. It's going to be 200. It could be 500 people. I don't know, but they're going to back it in there. And some people are definitely going to get coronavirus as a result of it. Let me just briefly show you this next graphic. Who one of the guests from last night's RNC brought on Fox News this morning. Sandman again, because remember, because he was canceled. And he will tell you about how he was canceled during his primetime RNC address and then the media tour that followed. Or is it possible that he wasn't canceled? Is it possible that some people like some people and other people like other people? And the right wing is giving him all the press time he wants and it's ridiculous to call him canceled?
Whereas, canceled.
I don't even know what it means. It doesn't mean anything. Nobody's canceled. Multiple time rapists are still doing okay. We're talking about how cancel culture is ruining America. By the way, look, if we're gonna accept everything they say about cancel culture, last night they pulled at the last minute a speaker who had retweeted something about the protocols of the Elders of Zion, some anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. They pulled her speech because she tweeted that. They give a night of speeches of how we should be allowed to think whatever we want and the left wants to crack down on it. Okay, so is that cancel culture? She tweeted something and they took away her speaking position in real time. They're not even having to talk about this, let alone defend it. I think it makes all the sense in the world to cancel her speech as a result of that. But you all think, the right wing thinks, that that's cancel culture run amok. That's, you know, Joe Mao Biden and his totalitarian group think. So which is it? Should we remove opportunities from people who do insane offensive things, or should we not? You really, it seems like you should have to decide, but this is America 2020, you don't. You can just believe whatever you want, your standards can change every day.
Yeah, well, if you actually follow that guidelines, you'd have principles, and that's something this party has zero of.
Yeah,
absolutely no principles. So again, that question should be asked every time you bring it up. Hey, what about the woman that you canceled? It doesn't match up with your anti-cancel culture. Number two, if you get canceled, it's because you're someone who had something and they took it away from you because of what you did in the past or currently. That's what I would see as cancel culture. You're canceled. You don't get those opportunities anymore. If you're a big time actor and you get lots of roles, and then we find out you're a piece of garbage, then people stop offering you roles and then your opportunities go away. What opportunities did this kid have at whatever age he was when he's out there on those steps that people have tried to take away? His opportunity to go to class? That's all he did. That's all he was doing, was going to class, going home and playing video games. So did someone take his PS4 out of his room? I don't know what we're talking about here.
What did he
get canceled from?
I don't know. All of this is just so insane, this conversation. And to see people taking it seriously, you know, mostly on the right, but a lot of centrists and some people, I think, even on the left are opportunistically trying to use it. It's just, it's not actually a thing. And if it is a thing, it's not a new thing. This is just the same conversation about political correctness and what's political correct and what wasn't that we had back in the 90s. That's not some big new woke thing. That's 20 years before anyone used the term woke. It's just such a repetitive conversation that we've been having as a culture for as long as there's been a culture. And I'm so sick of it. So as of the end of the first night of the RNC, we've had one night of the RNC for these numbers. We had the DNC as well. Let's talk a little bit about how much coverage there's been of it. Is it positive? What can we learn about what possible effect this might be having on the electorate? Because after all, if these conventions are supposed to do anything, supposedly they're supposed to influence the public, right? Well, comparing coverage of the first day of the DNC and the first day of the RNC, the RNC's first day received, what is that, 40% more coverage if we take a look at this, and Media Matters did a great job. This is across ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC. A gigantic jump in coverage for the first day of the RNC, and I get it, it was crazy. Our live stream on Monday had like a 50% jump in live viewership, so I get it. But take a look at the breakdown. Remember, we're going to be analyzing the liberal media. Here is how the coverage went on the first day for each of the major news outlets. So you can see that all of them except NBC gave more coverage to the RNC. The MSNBC gave about an hour extra, 50% more coverage to the RNC. Fox News, they couldn't be bothered to cover the DNC in the first day. They give you like one episode of SpongeBob worth, and then all day for the RNC, it was coverage of it. Even more than MSNBC. So they're duking it out to see who can give the most coverage to the Republicans. But geez, there's not quite equality when it comes to that, JR.
Oh my God. Well, at least it's not a surprise. It's what we could expect from them. And honestly, if they'd have shown more of the DNC, not saying more than they showed the RNC, if they showed more than they did of the DNC, the audience would have revolted. They're already getting pressure from Trump and his company and telling people, hey, you're supposed to avoid Fox News every time they halfway step on the line because they have an analyst on that voices the obvious truth of what's going on. In just one particular situation, I mean, they're ready to bail on Fox and go to OANN and go to, what's the other one? Then I signed Breitbart. There's two of these insane outlets that they're not pushing for. But OANN is getting the majority of the clout. So Fox News, no matter how close they go on to this president, they're still getting pressure to be like, it's not enough. There's never, too much is never enough for someone like Donald Trump as far as loyalty to him, that he will not give back to you.
Yeah. By the way, I saw someone in the chat said the RNC started earlier, which, yeah, that's technically true. And Trump did speak earlier. You're right. It is unfair to compare a full day of the RNC. So let's compare just the night. So Fox News evening coverage of the different nights. We have the whole of the DNC. Let's bring this up. And then we have the first night of the RNC. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen in future nights, but not quite equal there. I mean, they talked a little bit about, I think Kamala Harris on night three drove quite a bit of it, but no, they were all about it, obviously. And here's the interesting thing. I don't care that much about how much these channels talked about it, but I want you to see how much more focus went on the RNC when you understand that far less actual people were watching the RNC. About 17 million tuned into the RNC's first night, compared with 19.7 million for the Democrats. So almost 3 million difference in viewers. Monday's total live TV audience fell 26% from the 2016 RNC. The Democrats had fallen about 24%. So they both fell, but a lot more people were watching the DNC. But that wasn't reflected in the coverage. They apparently had to go out of their way to find it because the media was focusing a lot more on the Republicans there. And I'm going to keep it real. I'm really only mentioning the ratings because there's one individual who it's got to burn that the ratings were down so much and so much less than the Democrats, who were so boring after all. I mean, they were. Like, think about it. They have done everything they can to get people to watch this thing. They're bringing crazed people up. They might talk about QAnon anytime. They've got people on drugs screaming into the mic and everything. And even then, they couldn't get as many people to watch as watched John Kasich talk at the crossroads.
Oh my God. This is what disconnected gets you. So when you're disconnected from the general public and don't know where the pulse is of America, as you continue to distance yourself from people, you don't know it. So how do you know you're getting, you're further and further and further from the way people think if you have no idea what people think and honestly don't really care what they think? So as they see this lineup of Trump, then followed by another Trump, then followed by the third and the fourth Trump, they don't realize that then, as they keep going, Donald Trump is the best human being to ever live. Donald Trump, you're the best. Donald Trump, I wish you could be here forever. Donald Trump, you're the most awesomest person I've ever seen. Oh, Donald Trump, your face. So if that goes all night, even the supporters eventually go, like, even if it's subconscious, since your brain gets tired of the same monotonous digging and constant and constant. And there's way too many other entertainment things, options that we have these days, you know?
Yeah.
So people have to sit and watch you talk about Donald Trump over and over and over again. They already agree with you, bro. They don't need you to keep telling them that he is the new God. Because they're kind of over it. So even the supporters, even though they may still go vote for him, they don't want to keep listening to this. They still. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't want to keep saying it. But anyway, so by the way, I just wanted to mention something I saw in the chat. It was when Ben dropped the F-bomb, the person's like, that's called a Tom Carper now. So we've been told for months now, we gotta get our sports back, but we also gotta get our schools back. And don't let this pandemic thing stop that from happening. It's gonna be totally cool. Kids never get sick. Come on. Okay, so let's check in. Let's see how it's going. Florida confirmed almost 9,000 new COVID-19 cases among children within just 15 days in August as schools reopened. It took less than 2 weeks for 9,000 new child cases. Out of the 8,995 new cases, more than 80% were discovered among children aged 5 to 17. You know why? Because kids aged 5 to 17 are always sick and they will track down whatever virus or bacteria they can. And they did in this case. And it's interesting that the Florida Education Commissioner, Richard Corcoran, mandated in an emergency order originally that if you're a brick and mortar school, you have to have 5 days of in-person instruction each week or we will take away your funding. And that had to be overruled by a judge saying that the schools have a constitutional requirement to operate safely. They can't do that in this condition. Turns out the judge was right, because now about 10,000 kids in just 2 weeks have COVID. And you know, God only knows how many other people they potentially spread that to. So that's Florida. We got a COVID-19 outbreak at Biloxi High School. It's been blamed on a large social gathering, according to Mississippi officials. In the past week, there have been 31 outbreaks reported at Mississippi schools. Just Mississippi schools. One individual.
Not 31 cases. I'm sorry. Not 31 cases.
Outbreaks. 31
outbreaks. Let's make sure that people understand that correctly.
If I had told you there were 31 COVID outbreaks across America, you'd think, oh my God, 31? No, this is just in Mississippi, just in their schools. And so hundreds of kids have become infected. You have 144 cases in teachers. We've got 600 teachers and 4,000 students being quarantined. You know, my heart goes out to every one of their families, terrified that they might have this lethal virus. Somewhere between 20% and 33% of all students in Mississippi now need to be quarantined. It's been like 2.5 weeks. So that's cool. University of Alabama alone reported 560 new COVID-19 cases in 1 week. One university, 1 week, hundreds and hundreds of cases. My home state of Connecticut, they were gonna do in-person classes, and there was so much COVID blowing up in those areas that they decided, no, we're gonna do this online actually. So credit to Connecticut for that. And so, look, you know how I found all this? I Googled for like 3 minutes. God only knows what other outbreaks are going on. But like it is just riddling the country as these schools reopen. And again, this isn't taking anyone by surprise. We knew it was gonna happen. We've said how many times it was gonna happen. And now what do you know, it's happening.
Well, other ones are Notre Dame had their outbreak. Ohio State actually suspended hundreds of students because previous to classes beginning to start, they were breaking the rules with parties of large parties and large gatherings and things like that. And they're basically telling the students, hey, you guys wanted to be back in person. Now you're breaking all the rules and this is not gonna make it work. So what did you expect college kids that are getting back after a summer break, partially and mostly of quarantine and keeping away from each other? what do you think they're going to do when they all get together back at that college setting? Do you think they're going to all sit in their apartments and dorm rooms and hang out by themselves with just their one roommate? And if somebody knocks, they go, wait, where's your mask, John? No, it's not going to happen that way. They're going to party. And I don't know how you can't understand the makeup of certain folks. And it, you know, it's just the way it works. Now, point number two on this, which I think is related, so this is my speculation time. The CDC has suddenly changed its guidelines on getting tests. Did you hear about this, Joe?
I don't know specifically what you're talking about. Let me know.
Sudden reversal. Now they're telling the public that testing might not be necessary. They're saying if you don't have symptoms, if you're asymptomatic, it's not necessary for you to get tested. Just last month, they were saying if you've worked around someone who's got it or seemingly has it, those are the moments when you get tested so that you can limit that spread. You know how that old thing works? You track where you've been, we see who's got it and see who doesn't have it and see where how it's getting spread. That way we can find a way to contain it. Part of the way to get beyond this. Now, CDC gave, at this point at least, maybe there's some updates that I haven't seen yet, but the CDC has not given a real, has not commented on the reasons why they've switched this. Here comes my speculation. Now, the numbers of COVID cases that are still spiking, the numbers that are making it continue to increase are primarily younger folks. Because things like this, schools reopening, colleges, people having the parties and thinking it's all good and dandy because it's been several months. Those people generally are asymptomatic, younger, and get beyond it more. So we want to make sure those numbers stay nice and contained. Let's tell these people if they're asymptomatic, generally, without saying the younger folks, make sure they don't get tested. Let's tell them you don't need to get tested because we don't want those numbers to continue to spike.
Yeah.
Guess which statement that goes back to from this president? Hey, the only reason our numbers keep increasing is because we keep testing. The same ploy continues to be implemented with our agencies based off of this guy's aspirations to get reelected.
Yeah.
He doesn't want the numbers to continue to go. So as you see the numbers are going with younger folks, let's discourage younger folks from getting tested.
I mean, hard to argue against, like, oh, we know all the pressure being put on the CDC and the FDA to conform. And this isn't even the first time that they've done that. They've changed their recommendations based on that pressure before. And like, if you're hearing us say this and think, well, come on, there's gotta be some other explanation. What is the other explanation? That if you've been in contact with someone with COVID, you shouldn't get tested anymore if you don't have symptoms. Why, have we suddenly found out that asymptomatic people can't spread it? No, they can still spread it. Yeah, so you can still spread it. They just don't want you to know because those numbers look bad. They particularly look bad in the lead up to the election. Yeah. And so,
I'll tell you what, if you don't like my speculation, let's hear what the CDC has to say is their reason. Oh, they haven't given one.
No.
Oh, that's all we got is speculation then until you give me an answer.
I said it a million times. Until there is a virus, we will not be safe. As a country, we're going to be screwed no matter what because 30% of the country will never take the virus because they've been told that it causes zombie lizard brain control or whatever. But no, us individually, we're not going to be safe until there's a vaccine. Because people are never going to take it seriously and they're going to be manipulated by the media and by the government to not take it seriously. Video going around of a Black Lives Matter protest from the Columbia Heights area showing the sort of hectoring and pressure on an individual at a restaurant for not showing support. You've probably seen this, but let's roll it back. Okay, so that was a woman who was at a restaurant or something, and they were yelling at her to raise her fist to show solidarity. Ugh, what do you think, JR?
I don't know who these folks are.
I don't.
I don't know the build up to this stuff, but I mean, either way, I mean, I can believe that they're actual protesters. I'm not sure what the red hat said on it. I'm not sure if that was a mocking Make America Great Again hat that I saw in the crowd. But there was red
supposedly they're from everything I've read, they're authentic. They're Black Lives Matter protesters. And this is just how they were expressing it, I guess.
So again, and then they're confronting people at restaurants and telling them to join them, right? That was the whole idea,
I guess.
Right. So who prompted it, who thought this is a good idea. I don't know any of this stuff. So for me to criticize whoever this is that's doing this ridiculous action here, I don't know who it is. Have they come forward yet? Have they said, oh, yeah, this is our plan, this is what we're up to? Because from what I'm hearing from conservatives is that Black Lives Matter is this group of people who then they get these emails and then they all coordinate to say the same thing and do the same thing because they've been directed to do so. I'm waiting for the directive. Where's the email? They said, new arm of our movement. Start going and harassing people sitting at diners outside and tell them to join us. But make sure it's only the white folks that are part of the movement that are doing it. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of odd things that are happening here. And again, if it's organic and for real, actual protesters doing this, that's stupid. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
No, I'm glad that you... I'm glad that you're giving all those caveats. We, you know, constantly try to I don't know all those individuals. I'm speculating that they're authentic. And look, while seemingly every single person on the video that I could see was white, which is sort of interesting, I have seen other videos that imply that not everyone at that rally was white. If that changes your opinion or not, but
I'm sure there's other folks within the crowd. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the people that I see on the video, the majority of them that are all leaning over this woman's table, yelling.
It's not like this is not the worst thing in the world. I'm just saying strategically, how could this be the way? This is not, and look, by the way, it's not that they're inconveniencing someone. Like, I'm not one of the people that's like, don't block traffic or anything like that. Protests get to inconvenience people, but like running up on an individual who, as far as we know, is just sitting there eating, especially in pandemic times. And yes, okay, they're wearing masks, but they're getting super close to her. Like, no, don't get that close to someone. And supposedly, I can't say for sure, but according to the reports I've seen, the individual who I believe is the woman in the video says, I felt I was under attack, but she says, in the moment it didn't feel right. I wasn't actually frightened. I didn't think they'd do anything to me. I'm very much with them. I've been marching with them for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it's like, no.
Yeah, things like that. Because again, that's the lack of a thought process and assuming that someone is eating at the moment you see them, that they haven't participated, that they haven't voiced their support, that they haven't done anything, even if it wasn't based off protest that could help. You know, it's a lot of assumptions that be made about someone just sitting there eating because every protester goes home and eats at some point. So, or goes somewhere else and eats at some point. So, yeah, the assumptions that have to be made in order for this to be a valid move just don't really add up. I just need to know who it was, because that's the only thing that, in my opinion, in my at least watching that, I don't know who these folks are yet. Because you can also say that all the looting and the vandalism and the rioting, we've seen people that weren't actually a part of the movement doing those things. It's not out of the ordinary to say, so who are these folks? Mm-hmm. Then I can find out, fine, if they're in support of the movement, then we go ahead and chastise them and say, no, this is the wrong
approach. Supposedly they are. It seems pretty clear that they are, but I get what you're saying. Yeah, and it's not like they're not the worst people in the world. Like, it's just, you know, like maybe like learn from this and reassess exactly what your strategy is for bringing people over. Or like, because again, apparently that woman already supports the movement. So I don't know, just like not everything we do, even if we have a genuine belief, we're passionate, not everything we do is awesome and perfect and the best thing we could be doing. Everybody can be wrong. Everybody statistically will be wrong at certain times. That includes me and JR, by the way. We've learned, we've changed on things. Maybe some protesters can. It's not to say anything about like their, you know, motivations or anything like that. I just don't think this is the way. That seems to be generally how people have come down on this. So maybe we can take this as an opportunity to reassess.
Yeah, and if you think that's a good approach, rethink it before you even do it.
optimally. Yes, optimally. For more than half a decade now, Donald Trump pressing enter on a tweet has resulted in only one thing: dread and negativity going into the world. But what if it could be a different world? What if Trump tweeting could actually make the world better? Well, let's talk about Defeat by Tweet. And we're joined by this organization's both co-founder and the senior advisor, Xander Schultz. Rashad Robinson, welcome to the Damage Report.
Hey, it's great to be here.
I'm glad to have you on. I'm excited to talk about this. So taking Trump's tweets and making it a force for good in the world, tell me about your organization and what you're gonna accomplish.
Yeah. look, Trump has existed his entire life without consequences. The guy has done things that would get all of us fired or ruin our lives daily, and that includes the messages he sends out to the world, and only has been elevated because of it. And so it was nice for all of us, all the donors of Defeat by Tweet, to collectively finally add consequences to that. And we're doing so by funding Black-led community organizers in the swing states that, if properly funded, will be the driving force behind his defeat. And not only his defeat, but all of the local and state-level elections that we need to win if we're also going to achieve, at least move towards a more just country, move towards racial equity. And so it's an honor to both, you know, be able to poke the bear and fund incredible work of folks like Rashad and the other 21 organizations in the Justice Fund.
And Rashad, how did you get involved in this?
Well, Xander reached out. I mean, he's been a person, him and his entire team have been folks that have been really invested in finding ways to support Black-led organizations, supporting efforts to change our criminal justice system and build more energy. And you know, what I love about this idea immediately when Xander brought it is that far too often people talk about how much they care or how much they're outraged, but always don't have ways to act. Not everyone is going to get to be a frontline activist. Not everyone is going to work, you know, 24/7 for an organization doing this work. And inside of a global pandemic, we're not going to be knocking on doors in those final days in a lot of places. But ensuring that organizations have the resource and support so they can reach their people, that we can engage them and move people from care into action is critical. And if we can do that by connecting the very real threat of Donald Trump in the day-to-day interaction with helping people open their wallets and making those investments, then that is great. And I'm just always happy when we can pair our vision with execution, and we can also build the infrastructure around it to make change actually possible.
So let's talk about some of the numbers. So he tweets and money goes to these organizations and individuals. So how much overall are we talking about so far that's been raised?
We're approaching 1.3 million, hopefully tomorrow. We launched on June 26th, so we're only 8 weeks old. So we've had some nice traction. I think it's just the beginning of big things on that front. Another exciting milestone is we're going to hit $1,000 per tweet. So collectively, the 18,000 donors that donate to Defeat by Tweet are making up $1,000 per tweet. So it's nice. It's a nice round number. And I hope Trump, you know, one day sees this thing and understands the damage he's doing to himself. Not that he'll change his behavior. The guy has no discipline whatsoever. But it'd be nice for him to know what we're all doing, you know, to combat his hate speech.
And so obviously, like, the main reason it's good that you're doing this is that it's going to go to good causes and all that. But it is nice just to know that when you're experiencing in real time him losing it because he's live tweeting Sean Hannity or whatever, that each one of those is raising $1,000. Like, he weighed in on, you know, the tragic events in Kenosha last night. He tweeted two tweets about this morning. $2,000 going to a good cause. That takes a little bit of the sting out of some of how horrible everything that's going on is.
It's been a cathartic experience for so many folks. Like, the amount of folks that wake up and text me now are like, he tweeted 20 times this morning, and they're excited by it. And they're just completely ignoring the content. The content's irrelevant now. It's just like a cash machine. So it's also been nice for all of the donors to have some cathartic experience. And we're going to continue to play with that. Like, we're launching the Radical National Challenge, which allows people to donate every time he says the word radical in his keynote speech tomorrow. And so it's just another way of Trump doing this triggering thing. And how can we flip that on its head and get folks to be able to participate and enjoy the disaster that he is, knowing that they're funding really great work?
Yeah, well, I'm gonna be waiting to see, because you know he's gonna be tweeting during the speech as well. Someone will be tweeting for him. So the money goes to these.
He's been good for us. He's tweeting like crazy during the RNC.
He is. The money is going to these organizations. How do you go about figuring out where the money should go? Who should be recipients?
Yeah, as a white guy, I thought it was a good idea to disintermediate myself from being the grant maker or program officer as well. So we partnered with Movement Voter Project, who has a long history of working with really, really great grassroots organizations And we asked them to select the 22 most effective ones they knew in the swing states that could take on all this additional capital if we are able to move, you know, $5, $10, $20 million.
Yeah.
So those were our partners on the grant making side and the program officers selecting these organizations.
And Rashaan, I know that you've been writing recently about the connection between Trump, the social media platforms, the people who manage them. Obviously, these are very important to him. It's one of the reasons why this campaign is so enticing. It's sort of turning his power against him. But going forward, how important are these social media platforms, the rise of, you know, things like QAnon organizing on Facebook and all of that? How big of a source of support is that for Donald Trump in 2020?
I mean, it's a huge support for him, just the way the platforms are set up, but also all the sort of strategic choices the right has made to weaponize conservative bias inside of these platforms so that they treat civil rights as one side of the coin to you know, attacks on conservatives. I mean, if you watch the RNC convention, you would see throughout many speeches from the first lady on down, you saw people talking about the problems on social media platforms as if Donald Trump is not on social media platforms every day attacking people. So we know that these platforms are a huge problem. We know that Mark Zuckerberg picks up the phone and would call a Donald Trump before pulling down a post that he should have pulled down and then end up not pulling it down. What we're trying to do here is recognize that there's a long game of regulation that has to be in place. We need new rules of the road for corporations, and these businesses should not get to be this big and should not get to control the marketplace. But in the meantime, we actually have to win elections to be able to get new rules. And part of this is giving everyday people the ability to translate that outrage into dollars that will help fuel the type of winning strategy, with a deep recognition that the groups that have been selected, groups like mine, the Color of Change Pack, groups that like led by folks like Alicia Garza and Desmond Mead and Patrice Cullors and so many others, are at the forefront of not just winning elections, but at the forefront of challenging the type of corporate and government power that far too often stands in the way of the type of change that our communities need. So elections are to the puzzle, but we're working to build infrastructure so we can actually not just win elections, but we can win real world change.
Well, and you know, that sort of naturally leads into, let's say that hypothetically everything goes as planned. The organization is already taking off. I mean, people like Mark Ruffalo, John Legend, Andrew Yang, Cory Booker, Anthony Scaramucci, everybody's promoting it. So it's taking off. Let's say you raise a ton of money, goes to good good causes, and eventually Trump loses. Does the campaign continue once Trump is out of office?
Rashaad, answer this for me. Have we achieved racial equity if Joe Biden wins the presidency?
I don't think anybody would say we've achieved racial equity if Joe Biden. I mean, you know, in some ways we'll figure out how Donald Trump continues to engage and whether or not he captures as much attention. You know, this is not about simply defeating Donald Trump, but it's about defeating Trump. It's also about defeating all of the ways in which decisions that were made decades ago around the power that was given to corporations, the ways in which mass incarceration has been incentivized through a whole profit structure, the ways the big banks have been able to dictate the ways that our economy works across so many different spaces, we have a lot of work to do. And so part of what we have to recognize is that we need new rules of the road, and we need infrastructure that represents communities to achieve it. And this is one intervention that's happening right now that's incredibly important, exciting, and fun. And some of this just has to be fun sometimes as well. And then we've got to continue to recognize that the eye on the ball is not simply about beating Donald Trump, but about making our communities have all the resources, opportunity, and equity we deserve.
Yeah.
This is really, just to add to that, this is about building infrastructure. Infrastructure for these communities to not just defeat Trump. They happen to be the best investment if we want to defeat Trump, but to win all of these DA elections, these local elections, all of the things that have created this system that is so inequitable. And so will Trump remain the trigger in terms of the funding source after the election? Maybe, maybe not. We'll have to see how it plays out. But we're definitely going to make a pitch to the hopefully hundreds of thousands of donors we'll have come November 3rd that, hey, the best investment you can make in this country is an investment in Black community organizers. Yeah. Rashaad named them. The folks you're funding are literally the John Lewis's of today. It is Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, Daryl Atkinson, Phil Agnew, Rashad, it's really the heroes of our modern times. And so it's not just a fun campaign. I like there's a lot of F Trump energy out there, and I like that as a magnet that's bringing folks to this work. But I think some of you know our job is to then share the work that Rashad's doing and that these folks are doing, and say you should be invested not just now but in the long run. And this is a really thoughtful structure to do so.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope so. I agree with you. A lot of energy is out there. And I certainly agree that to the extent that literally any of 2020 and the Trump experience can be made just a little bit more fun, I don't begrudge anyone wanting to do that or making that happen. So I do thank you for that. I look forward to, you know, a future of every time I see him tweet feeling just a little bit happier than I otherwise would. And so thank you for that. If people would like to participate, what do they have to do?
So to sign up for Defeat by Tweet, you go to defeatbytweet.org. You sign up, you choose, you know, a penny, 5 cents, 10 cents per tweet, and you can sign up right there. Also, if the RNC has been particularly triggering, like I mentioned, we're launching the Radical National Challenge today as well. Mm-hmm. So if you go to defeatbytweet.org/RNC, you can sign up for that and donate a few bucks every time he says the word radical. He's trying to paint folks like Rashad as, you know, evil radicals, because Rashad wants folks to have clean water and not be murdered by the police.
That is crazy. You know, that raises a couple of important points. So why is it important to reclaim the word radical?
Look, every important hero that we all recognized was called a radical in their day. Nelson Mandela was called a radical. MLK was called a radical. This is not new. This attempt to slander people who have these bold visions for more equitable futures as dangerous people, you know, on the fringes. And, you know, and most folks don't have the time to listen to Rashad's whole platform, or haven't heard Rashad's whole platform, what really he sees, you know, the future being. And like the way I think the word radical, these are folks that are able to imagine a radically different future where we raise the social safety net, where people are treated better, and not only envision it, but then act on it. And so that's what radical means to me. It's important we reclaim the word. And it's important that we also show folks a lot, you know, a lot of what's going on is just showing folks historically, none of this is new. None of this is new, right? Painting civil rights heroes as radicals is not new. Trying to dismiss the media as, you know, biased is not new. And so I think we need to continue doing that work. I know you all do that work at the Young Turks, and, you know, I'm appreciative for it.
Thank you. And Rashad, your thoughts?
Nope, I couldn't agree more. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when we win, we get to write the history. Mm-hmm. And so part of this is actually having the infrastructure, having the strategy, and having the resources to win, so that we can tell the story of where we were and where we're heading.
Awesome. And one more final question. I don't even know if you can disclose this or even if you know, but you mentioned that when people sign up, they can do a penny, a nickel, 10 cents. What's the highest pledge per tweet so far?
I think we have a leaderboard on the site, actually. So
do you?
Yeah, I think we have $20 per tweet in there, which he tweets 900 times a month. So it's about 18 grand a month.
That is dangerous. You could tap out a bank account on Trump's Twitter.
Just to be clear for everyone, though, you can set a limit. So we project out 900 tweets a month, and you can say cap me at whatever that is. So if you're in for a penny, you're capped at $9. We won't crush you.
That makes sense. I appreciate you having the forethought there. Rashad Robinson, Xander Schultz, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone go check out Defeat by Tweet, and appreciate you both joining us today.
All right, brother.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.